This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Betts with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing of the case that right now is before the Supreme Court. The question asked by two different cases. One, the Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard, and one, Students for Fair Admissions versus the University of North Carolina, turning on the Supreme Court case Grutter versus Bollinger, turning on Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. However, Richard also introduces the fact that this language has been current in academic hiring for some time. I can't date it, but I could say that it was a revelation to me, these guidelines. Richard links in his piece to the University of California at Berkeley. The issue is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as I understand it, Richard, in order to be successful in an application to join these faculties, it is not only your research, say we're dealing with STEM, the science inquiries, not only your research, but you also must submit a document, a paper, a record. I'm not sure what it looks like.
Statement is the best way to put it.
What you will be judged or measured on the basis of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that's been in place for some time. Is that correct, Richard?
Well, it's certainly for the last 4 or 5 years, but the momentum on this is getting much more strong. And law schools are now also, for example, putting critical race theory as a required subject in the curriculum, where the view is you have to do two things. You have to be, one, critical about things, and two, you have to agree with us on everything that we start to say. But if you go back to the 1960s and 50s, you will remember that one of the great issues of the time were the loyalty oaths. In order to teach in universities, did you have to agree to oppose communism or something of the sort? And there was a very famous case involving a fine gentleman named George Anastopoulos, who refused to sign these oaths as a matter of principle. The Supreme Court upheld the oaths, which I thought was a terrible mistake, and George could never practice law for his entire life. Well, these are new loyalty oaths. What you have to do is to basically drink out of the holy water and to announce that you support all of these particular situations. If you want to get yourself a flunking answer, what you do is you quote Martin Luther King and say, what I do think is what counts is the content of your character, not the color of your skin. That's not going to be good enough. So what you have to do is explain what you can do in order to put forward these things. A friend of mine was talking about this one day, and he said that he had looked at a graduate pool of education applications in some department, and he said that there were 121 of these out of 122 which did that. What are they going to bring to diversity? And that the 122nd person had written something in there which says, I will bring diversity by bringing music into my technical program because I was a professional musician before I came into this thing. That's the diversity that I bring. But people, I mean, you literally talk to these people and they have these crises of conscience. If I say what I truly believe about this, I will not get in. And if I perjure myself, I might get a chance to get in. So if you're a conservative student and forced to choose between your professional education on the one hand and your intellectual integrity on the other hand, you are in a very, very difficult position. My view about it is universities should certainly take in people who believe in critical race studies. But if they're going to do that, they have to take in the people who are critical of critical race studies and let them work on this stuff. I mean, this is not a self-evident conclusion. We don't want to have a situation which says that everybody who believes that the criminal justice system is racist is going to be fine. Other people who believe that the cops are doing a good job, well, they're going to be terrible. I think the public, by the way, is moving very sharply in the opposite direction. That brutal murder of two innocent cops that took place in New York City and Harlem the other day, it brought forth a huge public response. And the thought that somehow or other killings by police are the real problem in America, when the ratio of police deaths to non-police deaths may be 1,000 to 1, and most of those police deaths turn out to be fully justified if you actually go through the record. I mean, all of this stuff is now creating the following crisis. which is the public just doesn't buy this. And so what you're doing is you're having universities, which are about 95% liberal in most places, putting these very short things into place, and a public which is probably 3-1 on the other side. That's the number, for example, with respect to President Biden's promise to say, I'm going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court. The popular sentiment is 3-1 against it, and I don't follow the polls very closely, but I think I would bet that his ratings are falling in part because not only is it general incompetence, but also because of that particular
thing. I come to a piece that you linked to your article in Defining Ideas by Lawrence Krauss, a distinguished physicist, and he writes in the Wall Street Journal editorial page, the Life Sciences Department at the University of California, Berkeley, reports that it rejected 70% of applicants 2018 to 2019. So this is long before the pandemic and all of the controversies of today, based on their diversity statements without looking at their research records. Richard, you suggest in your essay, and Professor Krauss does as well, this is about speech, isn't it? I mean, what we're talking about is obliging people to say things they may or may not believe. And isn't that a refutation of the First Amendment, freedom of speech?
Oh, my God. I mean, it flunks on two dimensions with public institution. First of all, it's absolutely coerced. We will deny you admission to any particular program unless you toe this particular party line. And secondly, it's overt viewpoint discrimination. And these are two virtually hanging offenses under the First Amendment. And so what has happened for a long time is everybody gives a wink and nod at what's going on in these places. And now what happens is the reckoning is taking place before a Supreme Court, six of whose members go in the opposite direction. This will be decided, I think, this year on some of these questions, next year on some of the other questions, so we don't know who's going to replace Breyer. But even, I think, somebody like Kagan, Justice Kagan, on some of this stuff, I think even she's going to start to blanch a little bit. And it's not even clear that you're going to get all the liberals for all of the programs on these sorts of things. And so what's really at stake in the Supreme Court nomination is the code word is that what President Biden will do is to appoint a black woman, if he can do it, who's farther to the left than Kagan or Breyer. And so what will happen is you're going to have a more divided Supreme Court, right? Because the center will now consist of, if you have to guess the three, it would consist of Kagan on the one hand, Roberts and Kavanaugh. One of the great ironies of this is people who knew him knew that Justice Kavanaugh was to the right of center, but not very much. And when this public outpour, this disdain, this contempt, this absolutely blitz campaign took against him, they were hitting the wrong guy.
Final question, Richard, just quickly, because we have a minute. Is there a way to maintain Grutter? Is there a way to keep it and adjust it? Can that be done?
Well, this is the real pessimism. I ended my column with the following observation. The only way in which you can have a successful affirmative action program is to have it run by people who, A, understand that they need it, but B, are aware of its limitations. And so they're going to try to keep the fine line between academic quality on the one hand and inclusion on the other hand. The moment the programs are run by people who see only upside and not downside, it's going to spin out of control. And what's happened since the university's control systems have moved sharply to the left in recent years, the moderating forces are not there. So what the Supreme Court, I think, is going to say is informal accommodations don't work anymore. We need the per se rule. I'm very unhappy about them having to say that. Notice I didn't say I'm very unhappy about them saying it. About them having to say this, because I think what has happened in the academic situation with the true bias with respect to hiring is really quite appalling. Perfect. If you were to try to get political affiliations, it's about 98-2 on people under 40, left and right. That's not a sustainable
universe. Professor Richard Epstein, writing for the Hoover Institution. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.